Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're happy you can join us again today, and we hope that you will learn something from the news articles that we discuss and whatever else may come up, whatever strikes us here in the mood. I want to remind you that just because you hear something that sounds interesting or intriguing and you think it might fit your facts and circumstances, please check with your existing advisors, and let's make sure, presuming that they understand your unique facts and circumstances, let's make sure that they concur with what you thought you understood, and moreover, whether or not it actually fits your own facts and circumstances. It's critical to make sure that the outcome is something that will be meaningful if you get there. I want to start off this week, since there was a lot of finger pointing in the debate this past Thursday night about who caused what deficits. I think it's interesting how that both parties are very responsible for our current predicament, and it's interesting to see them try to blame each other for what is a tag team event. And for those of you that are in the Republican camp, I can assure you that if you go back and look at who was in power the years that the deficits careened out of control, you're going to see some of those years were Republicans. And for those of you in the Democratic camp, I can assure you that you'll see many years, or at least just as many as the Republicans, where the Democrats were in control. And why is that? Because they're both politicians. That's the bottom line. Politicians excel if you want to keep track of the score. They excel at spending not just our money. They spend money we don't even have, right? They go borrow or print, as the case may be, whatever funds are necessary to fund all of the government spending that we undertake each year. The current year is no exception. In fact, according to CBO, just in the last 2 months, and it's not all current spending, but it's current enough to where they just revised the 10-year budget forecast here recently. I believe it was for the period, the 2 months ending, I think it was February, it's either February or April, we added $2.1 trillion to the 10-year outlook in terms of the deficit increase. Just in the 2 months that elapsed, again, it was either January to February, it was February to April. I believe it was the latter. And you'll have to forgive me, my eyes glaze over when I read about such matters. And it's unbelievable how fast the train is coming off the tracks. Continues to do so. The current budget deficit, according to, then this is the, actually it's not the deficit, it's the cumulative U.S. debt is now 34, this is the U.S. national debt. If you're looking at the usdebtclock.org, if you've got that app on your mobile phone, you can look at it real time while we speak. It is now $34,865 billion and some change. If you call hundreds of millions of dollars change. That'd be $192 million. It is insanity playing out right before our eyes. And for those of you that like to think more granularly, the debt per citizen checks in at roughly $103,500. The debt per taxpayer, which is probably the more relevant number, is a whopping $266,952. This is as of this moment. This is a real-time calculation. The U.S. tax revenue to date here in this fiscal year is almost $5 trillion. Of that, $2.3 trillion is derived from income tax. The first number, the $4.9 trillion, is U.S. federal tax revenues, not necessarily income tax, but I suspect we're layering on assorted other excise taxes and things such as this. Maybe estate tax, gift tax could be in there. The revenue per citizen is not quite $15,000 year to date per citizen. The payroll tax expense, I guess that's the other big component that goes into that $4.9 trillion. The payroll tax expense is $1.615 trillion. And you might have heard Mr. Biden bragging this week during the debate about the payroll tax and how he intends to have the wealthy pay their fair share. It's just there's one problem with that, Mr. Biden. The wealthy are not anywhere near the majority of the folks that earn income that's subject to the payroll tax. They don't need to. They've got plenty of investment income, a lot of which, if you're looking at the wealthy real estate investors, isn't even subject to FICA and Medicare. You take someone that's operating in the rental real estate space, be it multifamily or be it single family properties, their net rental income is not subject to the payroll tax. So Mr. Biden's example of taxing billionaires, and let's be clear, it wasn't 1,000 trillionaires that we have. That's what he said first time he mentioned it. He later corrected himself to say billionaires. Apparently, he thinks that if we just taxed them 1%, I'm not sure what the tax base is that he's got in his head. He's probably not even sure. He's probably just trying to remember one of the talking points that they tried to drill into him over the week leading up to the debate. Good luck with that. And, you know, he came up with some number, I believe he said 500 billion could be generated if we just taxed those 1,000 billionaires 1%. And I'm not even sure which number, again, his tax base would be. But I can tell you that if you tax 1% of $1 billion, that's $100 million right there. So I'm not sure. That's just on one billionaire. So I guess 100 million times 1,000. Let's see how many. That gives us. That gives us, it looks like $1 billion if I've got my zeros right. So he's wrong once again. But again, maybe he doesn't mean take 1% of their wealth. I'd be surprised if that's not what he was thinking. Because again, I don't think you're going to get anywhere close to 500 billion if you are taxing their earned income, which is what we pay tax on. Or normal taxpayers, you're paying FICA and Medicare on your earned income, be it W-2s or be it your self-employment income from sole proprietorship or perhaps a general partnership interest or otherwise an LLC interest that's deemed to be subject to self-employment. But in any event, looking at this usdebtclock.org site, which I visit often here on the show, I'm going to point out the four largest categories again. The four largest budget items continue to be Medicare and Medicaid at almost $1.8 trillion. Social Security is almost $1.5 trillion. Defense is now $902 billion. And close behind is interest on the national debt, which is currently $881.482 billion. And before the end of this fiscal year, that'd be the end of September here, 2024, interest on the debt will surpass the projected military spending, and it will be in the third spot, at over $1.1 trillion, just the interest on the debt. And going forward, according to CBO's latest 10-year forecast, CBO is the Congressional Budget Office, supposedly an independent umpire, if you will, that calls the balls and strikes on all things budgetarily financial in the government, they're saying that our deficits, as far as the eye can see, or at least 10 years, is in excess of $2 trillion. I believe $2.1 trillion is the number that they are forecasting. It's a dreary, dreary outlook, and we're going to mention again, for those of you that are hearing me talk about how bad off the tax and debt situation is, it's only going to get worse. It's not the political implications, really. I mean, aside from all the spending that's taken place, what I mean when I say it's not political is neither party have a solution. And I know Mr. Biden's solution is to tax more people. It's also, I'm sure, if we were to be able to drill down, it will be to increase the ceiling on Social Security. I believe it's currently a huge number. Let me check here real quick. I want to say it's in the 160,000 range. Let's see, 168,600. That's amazing. I can remember the days when it was no more. Let me check something here. If I go back in time to when I first came out of University of Houston and went to work at Arthur Anderson, the FICA ceiling was a whopping, let's see here. Here's, I think, a table. Yeah, this table has it. So in 1983, they don't have it as a percentage. It would have been 6,400. In any event, I believe the ceiling was somewhere, let's see, assuming 6%, divide that, let's say 80,000 or 90,000 maybe at the most would have been the ceiling. It was nowhere near where we're at now. In fact, that even sounds high. I think, let's see, the maximum, I was looking at a second source here. Let's see, 118,500 is what it went up to in 2016. So if we were to back up Oh, here's another chart that's got it. 83, the total rate for the self-employed would be 5.4. Well, that's just the Medicare piece. That's 2.9%. Well, we'll do a show where I give you specifics, but it almost doesn't matter. It's so far out of control. And here's why I say it almost doesn't matter. You watch. There's a bipartisan work group in Congress working on this, quote, solution to the FICA problem. And you know what they're going to propose? You watch. It's coming. Nobody's talking about it here around the election season. You can rest assured they're not going to be talking about how they're going to remove the $168,600 ceiling, and you're going to pay FICA on your total earnings, just like you do on the Medicare component now, the 0.0145, that's 1.45% of the employee compensation, and then, of course, the employer matches that 1.45, so you get a total of 2.9%. That's paid on the total comp, the total compensation that an employee is paid. And that goes forever. You know, you get a $50 million W-2, well, you're going to earn or owe Medicare on the entire $50 million between you and the employer, 2.9%. It's almost 3%. Of $50 million, what is that? $1.5 million, I think, if I'm doing it in my head right. It's crazy. And, of course, the FICA would be, at least 2.5 times that if it does happen, like I suspect it will. And, again, that's how that's their definition of fixing the problem. So for those of you that are self-employed, you know the pain of the FICA and Medicare tax because you get to pay the entirety between you and your company or you and your business self-employment income. You're paying the entirety. It's total of 15.35%. And in many cases, that is higher than the income tax rate you'll pay. In fact, for many W-2 employees, that's the case. So anyway, okay, well, enough depression material. Let's move on. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll come back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com. PRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fantasies. And there are many just like me. With big dreams and fantasies.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us once again. And as you may have just heard, anybody that would like to connect with me, whether it's during the show today or perhaps during the week, feel free to shoot me a text or you can call 713-581-0195. And if you want to have a phone call with me, you're welcome to go to our website at baplannershow.com, and you'll see a link there. Well, a couple links that are relevant. You'll see a forms link, which if you would be kind enough to fill out at least the first form, step one, client profile form for me, and then you know, when you submit that, then feel free to schedule a call at the link right next to it. And with a little bit of information in hand that gives us some idea of what you're about, we should be able to have a phone call that could be a little more specific as to the answers than we would otherwise. So if that's something you'd like to do, feel free to visit the website and sign up as appropriate. Okay, speaking of BeAPlannerShow.com, let's take a look at some of the articles that we've added this week on the resources navigation link at the top of the page. Under that, you've got news, and if you'll go to that page, you'll see assorted new articles. I think I added, three, which is probably more than we'll even have time to get through, but we'll try. The first one is the three new RMD rules that everyone needs to know about for 2024. So RMDs stand for required minimum distributions that one has to take out of their retirement accounts as they hit certain ages. And I would tell you it's sufficiently complicated with the recent Secure 2.0 Act that it's based on when you were born as to which group or which pool you'll fall into age-wise before you have to when you start taking your withdrawals. The first rule that they point out here, and this is certainly a positive, and this plays right into our hands when it comes to the reasons we like Roth, specifically Roth 401s. We also like Roth IRAs, but believe it or not, there's more than a few situations where a Roth IRA does pay income tax, and particularly in the real estate space, when you invest your Roth into real estate private partnership syndications, as many of our clients do, if there's debt involved, which I would suggest is always going to be the case, You don't make near as much money on a real estate transaction or investment if you're not using leverage. Leverage is the magic that creates above average rates of return. But in any event, RMDs, or required minimum distributions, no longer apply to the Roth 401k, as opposed, the Roth IRA has not had, I guess you could say they were never subject to RMDs, but the Roth 401s, even though the RMDs were not taxed, provided you met the five-year rule, but you still had to take money out of them, and that meant that you had to have money available to take out, which was always a little bit of a challenge for us in making sure that when you invested your funds into a transaction, you had some escape hatches to get the necessary capital in the account to be able to make those. But now the good news is it's no longer the case that you have to take required minimum distributions from your Roth 401k. Let's see. Let's just mention the prior paradigm, since I know we had some clients that were in that particular scenario. We would use a workaround, and that's effectively what this article is explaining, where we would roll over from the Roth 401 into a Roth IRA to get it to a spot where we didn't have to take distributions. But you may want, or you may have to do it, or you may have had to do it, because the five-year rule requires that you had to have established the Roth for at least 5 years before you could withdraw the earnings from the account on a tax-free basis. Still, it may not have been a problem. Depends on how much principal you had that you could withdraw. And, it's not every distribution that was subject to being taxed. However, if you open a Roth IRA for the first time, when you roll over your Roth 401, you would be prevented from withdrawing. You might be prevented from withdrawing as much as you need from the account without paying unnecessary additional taxes. Starting in 2024, that's no longer an issue. You can keep the Roth 401k, and you'll have full access to all of the money in the account, not just the principal. And at the same time, you won't have to withdraw more than you need due to RMDs, so you can keep the account growing tax-free. Second item to know is those who inherited IRAs since 2020 can avoid taking RMDs in 2024. So under the SECURE Act, SECURE 2.0 Act of 2022, if you inherit an IRA from someone who's already started required minimum distributions, you must continue making those RMDs every year. You must fully deplete the account by the 10th year. Those rules apply to non-spouse beneficiaries with a few exceptions for disabled beneficiaries. But the IRS is giving taxpayers some reprieve. Since the rule change went into place, anyone who inherited a IRA subject to annual RMDs between 20 and 24, that's 2020 and 2024, will not have to make a distribution this year if they don't want to. They still have to deplete the account within 10 years, however. Since you have to pay income tax on any amount withdrawn from your inherited IRA, you may want to defer withdrawals this year. This will give you more time to plan for taxes in future years. That said, since you have to deplete the entire account within 10 years, it may decrease your overall tax liability to space it out more evenly. So in any event, these are sufficiently complicated where you really want to speak to your tax professional before you go take the distribution and then worry about the tax subsequently. It will be too late in most cases. Those that are set, the third rule for this year is those that are 70 and a half and older can lower RMDs by up to $105,000 per year. If you have millions saved for retirement in your IRA, you may be looking at the hefty required minimum distribution each year. You might also be inclined to give some of your fortune away to charitable causes. The IRS gives seniors with big IRA balances a great way to donate to charity called a qualified charitable distribution, or QCD. The best part is that QCDs count toward your RMDs. For 2024, the IRS allows seniors age 70 and a half or older to make a QCD of up to $105,000 from their IRA. That's up from the previous limit of $100,000. That's an individual cap, so married couples could theoretically donate up to $210,000 from their IRAs. Note that QCDs only apply to IRAs, employer-sponsored defined contribution plans like 401k are not eligible. The qualified charitable distributions are a great way to donate. Not only do they count toward the required minimum distributions, as we just indicated, but the distribution is completely tax-free. That means you can still take the standard deduction on your taxes instead of itemizing to get the charitable contribution deduction. As a result, you could save even more on your tax bill. Even if you don't have the money or desire to donate $105,000 from your IRA each year, you can still use a QCD to drastically reduce your required minimum distributions and your tax bill. And then lastly, let's see. Well, I think that's enough said on these three rules. If you have questions about any of those, I know these aren't the kind of things that you listen to someone describe on the air necessarily, and it sticks with you. But if there was any piece of that topic that appeals to you, feel free to connect with us again, baplannershow.com. There's a call link on the right side of that masthead that will get you to a sign-up spot for a phone call with us. Let's see. It looks like we're right on the mark for taking our second break. Why don't we go ahead and do that, and we'll return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we've been talking about the U.S. debt situation, the negative status of our future balance sheet in this country. You know, we've got a significant known deficit or cumulative debt nearing the $35 trillion mark, but there's another 120 plus trillion that's what we call unfunded, the unfunded mandate that's out there. And, you know, I try to explain to people that, you know, the fact that it's unfunded doesn't mean that we're not going to have to pay for it. These are items that have already been passed. They've already been signed into law by Congress and the president, and it's simply a timing issue as to when they will enter a current annual budgetary cycle. And the U.S. debt clock site does track those amounts, and you know, their deficit projections use slightly different economic assumptions than some of the other groups out there that track it. But you know, you can take your pick. You know, the Tax Foundation, I believe, tracks it. The TruthInAccounting.org group tracks it. The CRFB, the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, tracks it. That's the group that Maya McGinnis heads up. You see her interviewed quite a bit on news shows, and she does quite a few YouTube videos. But I want to turn to an article, speaking of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Our next article on the list is the Trump and Biden, the National Debt article. And it's a comparison. When I told you earlier in the show that the Democrats and the Republicans are equally adept at spending money they don't have, and in fact, in many cases, I'm convinced Congress truly doesn't understand what a deficit means. I mean, the definition of what is a deficit. Because if they did, I guess the only other conclusion is that there's a bit of insanity running amok in our congressional body. Because why would they, year after year after year, keep spending more than our collections? And that's what leads to our continued borrowing. And the problem we're going to have is that we're running out of the ability to borrow. How much longer the discretionary, the remaining small discretionary piece of our federal budget or federal tax receipts minus expenditures will be unavailable here in 2028, 29, or 30, depending again on how fast, you know, interest rates come back down and how that affects our annual interest expense. It'll be over $1 trillion here this year, and that will continue. By the way, by the year 2034, interest expense on the federal debt will exceed all other budget categories in our national budget. It's crazy what a huge expense that will be, basically a burden on our economy and on our ability to provide for a strong defense, on our ability to afford all the things we afford now. You can't keep spending it when you can't. I mean, it's not going to be a question then of spending what we collect and have available to spend, or what we can borrow when we can no longer borrow with the same relative ease as we do now, because the ability to pay 100% of the interest on the debt will no longer be possible at that point, unless taxes go up, which, you know, that's one way of doing it. I suppose if we could figure out a way to plant another GDP tree or two, that would provide additional tax receipts that would or could be used to reduce the debt. The problem is the crowd we have running the government, they won't use those extra receipts to pay down debt. No, they'll go spend it on other new shiny objects, shiny plans, for which they'll claim credit, even though the only credit that should be passed out is because they ran our country into the ground, debt-wise. But anyway, as I mentioned, the Republicans and the Democrats are equally adept spending money we don't have, but the article that I clipped from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget site is discussing the differences between Trump and Biden, the historical differences on how much they each added to the national debt. We'll just read through some of this. The national debt is on course to reach a record share of the economy under the next presidential administration, due in part to policies approved by Presidents Trump and Biden during their time in office, including executive actions and legislation passed by Congress. While it's important to understand the fiscal impact of the promises candidates make on the campaign trail, particularly because they reflect the candidates' own policy preferences and are not impacted by unexpected external events or the actions of Congress, the fact that both leading candidates have served as president also allows for a comparison of their actual fiscal records. This analysis focuses on the estimated 10-year debt impact of policies approved by Presidents Trump and Biden around the time of enactment. In this analysis, we find that President Trump approved $8.4 trillion of new 10-year borrowing during his full term in office, or $4.8 trillion if you exclude the CARES Act and other COVID relief. President Biden, in his first 3 years and 5 months in office, approved $4.3 trillion of new 10-year borrowing, or $2.2 trillion excluding the American Rescue Plan. President Trump approved $8.3 trillion of gross new borrowing and $443 billion of deficit reduction during his full presidential term. President Biden has so far approved $6.2 trillion of gross new borrowing and $1.9 trillion of deficit reduction. And again, the two key numbers, if you look at the net 10-year debt approved, Trump is at $8.4 trillion, Biden at $4.3 trillion. And again, if you take off the CARES Act and other COVID relief, they're pretty much neck and neck, which is what my point was earlier. They're equally adept at spending money we don't have, the two administrations. In any event, 77% of President Trump's approved 10-year debt came from bipartisan legislation, and 29% of the net 10-year debt President Biden has approved thus far came from bipartisan legislation. The rest was from partisan actions. President Trump approved $2.2 trillion of debt in his first 2 years in office, and $6.2 trillion, including $2.6 trillion in non-COVID relief, in his second 2 years. President Biden approved $4.9 trillion, of which $2.9 trillion was non-COVID, his first 2 years in office, and has so far approved over $600 billion of net 10-year deficit reduction since. But again, for those of you that have an interest in seeing a more in-depth discussion of this, again, the article is... I believe it's the second one down on our website this week. Yes, it is. I went back and confirmed that. And this is serious, serious debt that we're all going to pay the price for. And it's not just us. Our kids and grandkids are being signed up against their will, perhaps, but signed up nonetheless to cover much of this this debt. Let's go take a look. We've got just several minutes of our the last article for this week is, should my retirement savings be pre or post? Let's see, where did I put that article? Let's see here, I've got the wrong link. Let me find that again. I'm going to have to update the website. Hang on just a second. Well, I tell you what, I know the answer because this is something we preach about consistently. I'm not sure the Wall Street Journal response, which is where the article was, and again, I'll have to update that link. I've got it going to the wrong spot. But, you know, the typical response when someone asks this question is going to be given from the standpoint that your market-based investments is what people, you know, like authors of articles in the Wall Street Journal would be looking at. And I'll just tell you, if you compare what we look at when we're investing in real estate private partnership syndications, you're going to come up with a much different result, because when we convert to Roth, and we've got Roth dollars working, we've got significant returns that are not subject to tax at all. It's not just avoiding the UDFI tax, which that's true now in the Roth 401k world. It's not true in the Roth IRA arena. Unfortunately, even a Roth IRA is subject to the that's the unrelated debt-financed income tax, which is caused by there being leverage used in the transaction, whereas the self-directed 401 trust that we talk about often here on the show is exempt by statute from the unrelated debt-financed income tax. It's a perk that Congress approved way back in the day. I want to say it was in the 2002 or 2003 time frame. But bottom line is the large 401k plan administrators were successful. The Fidelities, the Schwabs, etc., were successful in getting Congress to agree to exempt the massive 401k pools of investment capital that were trying to invest those funds in real estate, although the way they would invest would be in the REIT or the real estate investment trust options. They were not, at least at that time, interested in the multifamily market, the 200 and 300 unit apartment complexes that our clients invest in, which now has drawn the pools of capital from the private equity folks. So it's still not the true Wall Street money, although a lot of it does originate with Wall Street, because they too have become aware of the significant above average returns that can be generated from those options. But when you're talking about should I retire or should I fund my retirement accounts with pre-tax or post-tax, I'm going to tell you something. The notion of a pre-tax contribution to a retirement account where you're getting a little deduction, you know, call it, I don't know, if you're in the highest bracket, maybe you're getting a 37% deduction versus not paying tax on your returns for the rest of your life. If you're in your 50s, the IRS current life expectancy tables show you'll live to the ripe old age of 85 to 90, depending on whether you're male or female. Trust me, forego the current year deduction. It's like a little drip from an IV bag that you're addicted to. Don't do it. Go ahead and pay your tax on the contribution. Make it to a Roth account and at least avoid the tax over the long haul. And even if it's a Roth IRA, we can work with you to help minimize the effect of the UDFI tax that even Roth accounts will pay. Okay, we're at the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in. We will return once again on Thursday this coming week, or this week, at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. We look forward to joining you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do